Every week on the Moth Podcast, we share stories that are funny, strange, heartbreaking, and above all, true.
I myself have been married for 56 years. Unfortunately, to four different women.
It turns out the people I was looking for all my life is what you people would call nerds.
Follow and listen to The Moth on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Raisin Bran? You got to put Raisin Bran up there. Everybody knows it.
It's Mike Shope.
Listen, get your own stupid old dying person team and choose your own cereals.
And the Bulldog.
I shall unleash my fury upon you like the crashing of a thousand waves.
That cereal is soggy. You reach into the fridge for the milk and open the lid on the milk to pour it in there, and that crap is already soggy.
I am untethered and my rage knows no bounds.
That's a problem. That's a problem for a cereal.
A huge problem.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog on WGR Sports Radio 550.
Still no lies detected. Just being honest. I'm biased. It's my hill to die on. How's everybody doing on a cool, kind of rainy summer day? What's going on? It's okay though. We needed the rain. Needed the rain. Who has anyone under the age of 40 years old ever said we needed the rain?
Oh, I'm there. My lawn needs the rain. Yeah,
really.
The lawn needs the rain.
You care about your lawn?
I mow the lawn, so I'm like, it's got to look pretty after I do, and it's gonna look kind of not good, like when it's, you know.
But if you mow the lawn,
yeah,
and you don't have to mow it. I mean, isn't that a win, kind of?
It is a win, but also, like, I drive home, I look at it, I'm like, we need some rain here.
Wow. Right at inception here, you're blowing me up. Aside from, like, farmers, some of whom could be under 40, and, you know, golf course superintendents, like professional landscapers, I think the average person working, like, the regular 9-to-5 type job. You don't get to we needed the rain until you're 40, I don't think. I don't know. I could be wrong.
No, it's probably right.
It sounds like you're 26?
27.
27.
I'm getting up there.
Boy, the years are flying by here.
I know. I know.
I don't feel like that's a thing that young people say.
It's not.
It's okay.
It's definitely not.
We needed the rain. I don't know.
I woke up this morning and I'm like, there we go, baby.
This might be an indication of me having sort of, I don't know, given up. I still take care of the yard, but when we first moved in the house, every year, like whatever grass the dog had killed in the preceding, you know, months, I would like sort of dig up, reseed and water and like really work at it. And that's gone. Like, that is just over. And I have graduated to, like, I don't even know. Like, we needed the rain. I'm not one who looks at my yard and goes, thank God we needed the rain.
Yeah.
And I'm just going, yeah, I don't have to cut it. It's fine. It's good. There's some ugly weeds growing there, but the grass isn't growing. It's brown.
You're making it.
I'm not mowing anything.
Yes, yeah, so you've graduated to we need the rain ?
Yeah.
I meant we need the rain exclamation point.
Yeah, okay. See, yeah, very subtle. That's punctuation for you. I mean, these things are meaningful. Yeah, I don't know. We needed the rain. What are some other examples of things only old people say? I've recently discovered here, I'll answer my own question quickly. This has been a relatively new development. I think I've mentioned it a couple of times in passing on the show. I take golf seriously enough now that I'm keeping score. I have a handicap. I register each round with a USGA handicap app. Mm-hmm. I'm tracking how I'm doing, and I noticed a trend that has developed over the last couple of years where when I play on a weekday, like a Tuesday morning or a Thursday morning, which I pretty regularly do, I score better. I don't really drink beer at all on weekdays. Like very, if we have a, you know, if there's a, an event or something, I'm going out, or, you know, maybe, but like it's not a regular thing. I go home from work, make dinner, watch a ball game, and go to bed. That's it. And there's no beer really in between there. I don't even really like keeping beer in the house anymore because it just, I'd rather not be tempted by it because I really still do like it a lot. But so I play on a Tuesday or Thursday and I'm shooting the best rounds I've ever played have been midweek rounds, like 71, 74 at Delaware. Okay. It's not, you know, the hardest place ever, to say the least, right? It's forgiving, I think is what I want here. But on Saturday mornings, we regularly play, although this July, I haven't played once there on a Saturday morning, but usually we'll play on Saturday morning, Jeremy and my son and my friend John Gale from Canada. And I like, you know, the weekend, Friday, we get out of work, like, go to the bar, have a couple, two, three beers. I feel that on Saturday morning when I'm playing golf. And I don't score, I very rarely score as well on the weekends as I do during the week. And it's not like, you know, it's not like I'm out doing keg stands or something on Friday night. It's really just a few beers. And so subtly couple turned into few. Anyway, I am like, oh, I better not have any beers. I'm playing golf in the morning. Like, that is not something that 20-year-old me or even right. like 30, 40-year-old me would have ever thought.
Yeah, no.
I used to subscribe to, like, I'm so terrible at golf, I'm looser and more relaxed mm-hmm. if I've been out the night before. Like, that is completely a foreign concept to me now.
I do love that for you, yeah, where you take it seriously enough where you're like, guys, the round's tomorrow. It's 7 in the morning.
Got to take it easy.
Yep. Yeah, I'm not there at all.
So much so that we played on the 4th of July. Owen and myself played a match against Jeremy and Joe from the morning show. And Jeremy is, to me, easily the best golfer amongst the four of us. He, in fact, I think they talked about this on the show, so I don't think I'm telling tales out of school. Last weekend, he played in a member guest at Transit Valley Country Club, Jeremy did, and shot 37 on the back nine, and they won the tournament.
That's big time.
Like, that, I mean, that is, like, I'm proud if I shoot 37 at Delaware. Like, 37 at Transit Valley Country Club. Like, holy cow, right? But we played on the 4th of July, and Jeremy even asked me, he had maybe a cousin visiting from out of town, you want to, you know, come out here, where, you know, we're meeting on Hurdle at our usual spot, you want to come have a few? And I went home beforehand intending to go and thought, nah, you know what, I'm not going to do that. And my son and I, we beat Jeremy and Joe, and Jer was, he had some beers on Friday night. I'll put it that way. Like, I don't, so he was kind of sloppy and his attention to detail wasn't great, and we beat him. In fact, he texted me and Owen after this round, I think it was Friday night or maybe Saturday, whatever day it was, that they won this tournament. He's like, I just shot a 37 on the back nine and we won the member guest at Transit Valley Country Club. I'm like, yet somehow you lost to us.
That's the beauty of golf, though, also right there. How did that? That's gorgeous.
But anyway, all right, enough old people. We needed the rain. Mike is away and is going to be away for the rest of this week and even all of next week. So we're going to stretch out here. I'll have some co-host opportunities coming up, including Sal tomorrow for a couple of hours, and then one day next week Sal will be in, and Nate Geary will be in for a few days as well. But some of just me and Zach hanging out with y'all, and that is going to be the case today. Sal will stop by, I'm told, in studio for a visit with me at 4 o'clock, and our old buddy Matthew Collar, now of the Purple Insider in Minneapolis, covering the Vikings, will be my guest at 5. I know, go figure. I was tweeting about the Bills receiving corps. Not from a, not choosing violence. okay? I mean, it's my first day alone in a while. I wanted to sort of settle in. This is not, I don't want Brandon Bean to call and yell at me. I mean, it would be great if he called, but, you know, whatever. I'm not looking for a fight, right? This is not a the Bills need more receivers point. It's more from a point of optimism. My thought today, and I tweeted this, I put a poll out. If you had to, if you were going to bet real American cash dollars on all receiver aside from Khalil Shakir elevating this year, and I think pretty modest numbers, elevating to 60 receptions and somewhere between 6 and 10 touchdowns, who would you bet on? Did I already say receivers? Because it's really pass catchers. I want to include Kincaid here for sure. I mean, I even went and looked at Knox's career averages just to round it all out, but I would never bet on Knox to be the guy that suddenly that happens to. I think Kincaid's a real contender for this idea. But who amongst the receiving core would you bet on becoming, you know, Shakir's 1B, if Shakir's 1A, or even elevating past what Shakir has done? That might be asking a lot. Shakir had 76 catches last year, only 4 touchdowns, but by far their leading pass catcher. Kincaid was second on the team with 44, only played 13 games. Shakir played 15. I mean, he sat out the finale, I think, but missed a game in there too. But anyway, I went and looked at the career averages for everyone. It was really easy for Coleman because he's only played one played the one season. But I put this poll up, I don't know, around lunchtime, I think. And what usually happens when you put a poll like that, or really any kind of poll up, is, you know, you get a couple hundred votes, and it, however it's going after a couple hundred votes, usually ends up being what it ends up. You know, it's pretty indicative of what the result is going to be. And now I haven't looked in a half hour, 20 minutes now, so I should check on this to make sure. But I, when I put the poll up, it was like, oh, the choices, I only included Kincaid, Coleman, and Palmer as your options on the poll. And other, you know, other comment, please, right? There's not room to do the whole receiving core and all the tight ends and everything. So I thought I'd choose the three that I would think most Bills fans are most bullish about. I mean, there's probably some Elijah Moore super fans out there that think maybe he can do it, or someone who really loves Curtis Samuel, who's, you know, had, you know, a decent career in the league, but even he, his career averages are not even at that level that I'm describing. And so the poll, one thing at a time, the poll initially started out, it was like 33, 33, 33. Like, it was like a dead heat between all three choices. And then like an hour or two went by, and Coleman sort of elevated beyond the other two. And then Palmer got a late push. But Kincaid is third. Coleman's got 40% of the votes. Palmer, 34. Kincaid, 23 at this point, with 850-so votes tallied. 1.9% are saying other, and I've got a few replies here for Elijah Moore. If you want to play along, obviously lines are open. It's just me and Zach hanging out. So we're always certainly more open. I mean, we're always open to taking phone calls if they're there, but even more so on a day when one or the other of us is on vacation like Mike is now. So the phone number is 803-0550. If you want to get in on this or just play along on social media, that's fine. But if you were placing a bet on which Bills pass catcher other than Shakir will break through to, say, 60 catches and between 6 and 10 touchdowns, who would you throw your money on? I would tell you, for me, and I'll get you all everybody's career averages, including three guys who weren't included in the poll because, again, there wasn't room. I would put my money on Coleman myself. And because I think we've got such a small sample size here with him. It's just the 1 year, and he missed time, and I feel like the potential for him to take a step is really there. I think whatever concerns there are about him, his ability to separate, and whatever else you might not love about him as a prospect coming into the draft and being on the Bills now going into a second season, I still think there is a skill set there that can elevate. I think his size, I think his athleticism, I think there's a player in there that I think can get off. It might require them getting more versatile in how they use him, and conversely, Shakir as well, maybe swapping, you know, roles at times just to try to work other guys in and get Coleman going. But I'm sort of buying the summer hype on Coleman at this point. And I recognize how dangerous a proposition that is, but it's not like he's some depth player, right? On a last chance. It's not even like he's Elijah Moore, who's, you know, not on a last chance, I wouldn't say, but I mean, he's facing a numbers game, I think, to become a meaningful contributor on this team. But it's interesting, amongst the wide receivers, he's got the best career average reception-wise. Here's the rundown. The three guys I mentioned in the poll, Kincaid's career average, 2 years, 58.5 receptions, 2 touchdowns. Coleman, obviously, 1 year, so there's no need to do averages, 29 receptions, 4 touchdowns last year. Palmer has averaged 45.5 receptions per season, only 2.5 touchdowns. He is spiked by one big year, 170-ish catch year in L.A. with the Chargers, but those are his numbers. Samuel is at 43.5, 2.8 touchdowns per year, and Samuel is also someone who spiked. He had a year very similar to the year Shakir just had. Quite a few years ago now, but Samuel had like a 77 catch season somewhere in there that boosts that. Elijah Moore, career averages, 50 receptions, 2.25 touchdowns. I went ahead and threw Knox on here just because he's going to be on the field, I'd presume, a lot. 32 receptions, 3.8 touchdowns per year. And he's also sort of, the touchdown number is helped a lot by a big year and then a pretty good year the following year. I think he went 9 touchdowns and then 7. And since then, it's been a little more scarce. But those are the averages. And while I think you can look at Moore and Palmer in different ways, but their averages are encouraging. Kincaid's average, you know, the touchdowns are not good, but 58.5 catches, including that 73 catches as a rookie 2 years ago, should be encouraging. But of all the guys here, he might be the one I'm most worried about staying on the field. I know it was only one day, but already knee soreness, and I think it really undid his season last year. And I'm a little, I mean, I guess you could choose to be worried or not worried about anyone in that regard. But with Kincaid, I just feel like there's more reason to be a little leery of him. So I would bet Coleman myself if I were finding my way to putting a bet in on this. And I, you know, there's probably some place in some way that you can do that kind of thing. Like, I wouldn't want to just go to his over-under receptions, because I'll bet it's really low. I would want to juice that up and go like 60 and say 7 touchdowns or something if I were going to put a bet in on Coleman. I just think the opportunity is going to be there for him to be on the field on a very regular basis. And I think the Bills should be motivated to get both he and Kincaid on track to the point where they are regular and real dependable contributors. There's big draft stock to varying degrees. I mean, one's a first-round pick, one is the first pick of the second round. But the last 2 years, pass catchers are your first picks, and I would think that the organization would want to get those guys featured and have them, you know, look good. I mean, you know, provided they can both walk and chew gum, which I think they've already demonstrated they can do. So Coleman would be my bet. 803-0550 is the number. You want to get in on this? We'd love to have you. Plenty of room for you today. Like I said, we don't have a guest until 4, and that will be Sal off of another day, a return to practice today for the Bills. And then at 5 o'clock, Matthew Collar. Again, 803-0550 is the number. Mark is going to lead us off here in the first segment of the day on WGR. Hi, Mark. Thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hey, Bulldog, how are we doing?
Good, man.
You stole my thunder last second. It's definitely Keon.
Well, I work here, so sorry.
That's right. You can play the averages game, right? Like, if you take Keon and times two his season last year, he kind of reaches the averages of the other players already. And then, you listed all the other variables and reasons why he could step up and, more opportunity share, his draft position, so on and so forth. But the obvious answer is Keon's the guy that can take that jump. Otherwise, you're throwing, darts against the board and saying this guy's going to have a career breakout year, this or that, which, usually we know how that goes. Guys are who they are.
Right.
So, Keon.
Yeah, and I think for the Bills, that's the best case scenario, too. I guess you could make the same statement about Kincaid, but I'm a little less bullish on him than I am Coleman. But I think if Coleman becomes someone who they can count on, I mean, that really answers a need. Like, whether he ascends to the level of like a bona fide number one, 110 catch guy or something, I mean, I'm not predicting that. But right. I think as a compliment to what they've got with Shakir, if I can get him in the neighborhood I'm talking about, I think that's really good for the Bills' future.
Yeah, I was the same way with Kincaid, too, but you also brought up that point where, you just can't trust him on the field at this moment.
Right.
So I'm a Kincaid truther. I'm with you on that, but, yeah, I think Keon's the right answer at this point.
All right, Mark, thanks a lot. Appreciate the call, man.
I'm missing Pittsburgh Farms Dairy. I've been in the city. I've been out of Pittsburgh for, like, 7 years now, so all these Farms Dairy tweets everywhere, they're killing me.
The what?
I'm a Pittsburgh native.
So
Farms Dairy. They're all over the Twitter app.
Yeah. I've never been, so good for you if you – but I'm sorry.
Right up your alley, Bulldog. Right up your alley.
yeah, it's ice cream. Thanks. I'm not really sure how to take that. Right up your alley. It's ice cream. It's a place you go to, like, pack on calories. Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely pro ice cream. That's not a, there's no age dividing line there. I think you love ice cream when you're, as soon as you realize it exists, you love it, and you probably love it until you're dead. Right? It starts and stops. But yeah, that's a feature of training camp. All the media folks, if you follow, lots of the reporters, it's that place, Pittsburgh Pub, and there's some new contenders, right? There's a Bar Bill out there now, and Sal was at some great place on the lakefront, Marge's lakefront, maybe. Anyway, looked great, the pictures I saw. But yeah, Pittsburgh Dairy is a big one, a regular stop during training camp for everyone, and I guess for the players too, and Bills personnel in general. All right, 803-0550 is the number. Again, you want to get in, I'd love to hear from you here. Lines are open. If you were placing a bet on which Bills pass catcher other than Shakir will break through to, say, some modest numbers, 60 catches, 6 to 10 touchdowns, who would you throw your money on? Kincaid, Coleman, Palmer, someone else, Samuel Moore, get in on it. Love to hear from you. Sal at 4, Matthew Collar at 5. We're off and running on a kind of dreary summer Thursday here on WGR.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, we share stories that are funny, strange, heartbreaking, and above all, true.
I myself have been married for 56 years. Unfortunately, to 4 different women.
It turns out the people I was looking for all my life is what you people would call nerds.
Follow and listen to The Moth on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I would describe it as us having to be consistent with the connection in terms of after every play, I'm going to him and I'm saying, is that where you wanted me to be? And asking for feedback, especially after practice, asking him what routes he wants to run, where does he see me coming out of this break. Just a lot of reps and doing it over and over and over again.
That is Joshua Palmer, new Bills wide receiver off of 4 seasons with the LA Chargers, talking about his chemistry with his MVP quarterback, Josh Allen. Palmer, among those who were added, we'll see what tomorrow brings, but he, I think, was spending a lot of time with trainers today is what I read while practice was going on. I'll save the whole rundown on all that stuff until Sal gets here at 4 o'clock. But You know, they got a couple guys back. Knox was back practicing today. Elijah Moore was back practicing today. But Palmer, I think, did not make it through the entire practice. Didn't look like anything serious, but he was, again, spending some time with the trainers. Thanks for tuning in here on WGR this afternoon. I am the Bulldog. Mike Shope is away on some vacation time here. We've opened up today talking about the Bills receiving corps. I know, right? Go figure. But no, I'm coming from a complimentary, optimistic place. If you were placing a bet on which Bills pass catcher, other than Shakir, because he already passed my thresholds here, is going to break through to, say, 60 catches and anywhere from 6 to 10 touchdowns, who would you throw your money on? And I'm saying Coleman. I like what I'm hearing and seeing about him today. So far in camp, 7 practices or 7 days in to camp, but certainly difference of opinion are welcomed here. One respondent on Twitter, Hobbs, says more is his answer. I had the poll, Kincaid, Coleman, Palmer, other, and please comment. And this person commented, Moore, Elijah Moore, 80-plus receptions, 1,100-plus yards and 10 touchdowns. That would just be so massive. And look, I don't know, maybe guessing Coleman can approach 60 and 6 to 10 touchdowns is just as unreasonably optimistic given what his rookie year looked like. You know, Moore has never had the opportunity to play with a quarterback as talented as Josh Allen, nor be a part of a team as talented as the one that he's on now. But the problem I have with him getting too excited about him, it was before camp even started, wasn't he a part of some workout group? I can't remember who was organizing it. Chad Johnson. Elijah Moore was a part of that group, and there was a clip of him doing some sort of cone drill.
Yeah, it was incredible.
Cutting, and the little black specks from the turf were flying everywhere. It's like, oh, look at his feet. Man, he looks awesome. Problem I have getting too excited about Moore is just the numbers game. I'm not really sure where he fits in, and honestly, it isn't always who's the most talented receiver, right? They've got Samuel, and there's an investment there in Samuel, and I feel like he and Moore are close enough for the purposes of our discussion and for the purposes of the Bills building their receiving core. I feel like he and Samuel are similar enough. Moore's a little bigger, but I think both guys will be fighting to get snaps if they're both here. I'm not even assuming that they will both be here, and because special teams enters into it, right? A Jalen Virgil body type enters into it. Return ability even. I mean, I don't know. I think LaVisca Chenault is really tough to try to make this team, even tougher than Elijah Moore. But I am not assuming. I mean, Coleman, Palmer, Shakir, all yeses. I think Samuel is a yes. He's scary with injury stuff. He's already missing time now, here earlier than I think he started missing time last summer. And, the guys that have been around here, Shavers, they seem to like. Jalen Virgil, there's a draft pick. Wait until Hard Knock shows up. Did you see the highlight of this Steven Gosnell long catch from practice on Tuesday?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Weeks ago, I'd have to go find it, but my buddy Pat Moran from the Talking Buffalo podcast, I think, asked one day on Twitter, who's like the sneaky star, right? Who's someone that we're not thinking about that's going to be featured on Hard Knocks? And if I didn't actually reply to him with this Steven Gosnell, it's who I wanted to reply
that's
with.
That's who you were thinking of.
I was thinking of. Because, I think it's falling into place. I mean, he caught the longest pass play, I think, of camp so far was a completion to him for a touchdown the other day. He's an undrafted free agent who, I think I've got his story right because I just checked it the other day, tore his knee up in Virginia Tech's bowl game at the end of the 23 season, but rehabbed so vigorously that he came back and played in 24, right? So January of 24, actually, but it's the end of the 23 season, and he was back playing when the 24 season kicked off. Did not have a huge year by any means, but I just feel like that story is going to be compelling, and he made a big play already, and I'm expecting that to show up on Hard Knocks. When it debuts on Tuesday, right?
Yeah.
Like that. And so that's a guy, it's the power of television, right? You might not be thinking about this guy at all. Maybe right now is the first time you've even heard his name, right? With me talking about him on the radio. You're going to sit down to watch Hard Knocks, and if they go in this direction, I you know, there might be too many other compelling storylines for this to make the cut. I don't know. I'm not in charge of HBO's Hard Knocks. I don't know. But I feel like they like the sort of plucky underdog guys for that show, and as soon as, with some dramatic music playing, you get him talking about how hard he worked to come back from the knee injury in such a short period of time and play, and how brokenhearted he and his family were. They didn't get drafted. I don't know that this is true. I'm creating the vignette for you, okay? And the music is playing, and then you're going to show him running routes, and he's going to catch this long bomb. And people are going to go, oh, I like this guy. Like, and I'm not making fun of you. Like, this is how it works, man. Like, media, especially visual media, is manipulative. Like, it gets you. So if they present him in the right way, I just have a feeling he's like a sneaky sort of under the radar star of Hard Knocks. Maybe early on.
Oh, 100%. Hard Knocks has a type. We all have a type as well.
Right. So, look, I'm not telling you I think he makes the team or anything, but it's just another name. But when I look at Moore and Samuel, I'm not assuming that they're both here because of special teams, because of returns, because of Shavers and Virgil, guys who've been in the system. There's also a draft pick in Prather who's also a bigger body, like different body type. They may want to have, you know, like if they're counting on Coleman, which they should be, they may want to have someone who's more similar to him should something happen to him. And, you know, you got to get pretty far into the depth chart to find that guy. So I just don't know. I think there could be a long shot. And Moore's the easier guy to cut because there's not a dead money investment that's going to be hanging around there. I was really surprised when we talked about this maybe last week or the week before, how much Samuel would cost to offload if you wanted to, even now post June 1st.
He's so, borderline unmovable.
Yeah. So I think that makes it tough for Moore. I mean, I love this call. 80 catches, 1,100 yards, 10 touchdowns. It would be amazing. That's a guy that I'm not even assuming is on the team. I'd like him to be on the team.
Mm-hmm.
Frankly, if it were up to me, I might prefer he be on the team instead of Curtis Samuel. Like, if that were the choice, right? From everything I'm saying here, body type, like fit in the offense, what skill set, that kind of thing. But I just don't know that it's that likely at all because of the contract that Samuel's got.
I ended up getting there this morning with Moore. Because, I mean, we've had this conversation. Like, I love Elijah Moore. I'm kind of a sicko for it. Like, Hobbs is my burner account on Twitter, obviously. But I'm kind of with you. Like, it's the numbers game. It's not fair, what have you. Sal is a big Tyrell Shavers guy. He looks like an NFL receiver. They probably just have way too many guys in front of him. I think your stat line for, like, who's going to have this might end up actually being the best receiver on the team. Especially if you can get to, like, 6 to 10 touchdowns, that might just be the guy. Because they really don't have anyone that's going to demand 140 targets, 102 receptions like you had for Elijah Moore last year. He had 102 targets. It's not going to happen. I think it'll actually be Palmer. I love the Keon hit. I like what I'm hearing from camp. It sounds great. He's not a volume guy, I don't believe. And I think there will be games running where it's just, Keon gets like a target or two. I mean, it might work. It might be a touchdown, but he's not really a part of it. Where Palmer, I mean, everyone with the Bills bangs that guy's drum. Everybody.
Yep.
Bean, in now his like infamous or famous appearance here, like he was banging his drum. Like, that's their guy. And he sort of fits the bill of what Allen likes to throw to. Like, Keon, like, that's the one thing I can't totally wrap my head around, is like, that's not really the guy Allen particularly likes to throw to, that kind of player. Palmer is.
Right. Coleman is almost a return to what they started out
100%.
Doing with Allen, right?
Yeah.
It was the bigger guys were here, Andre Holmes, Kelvin Benjamin. It was like catch radius because he's not accurate. Mm-hmm. And then they, even before that rookie year was over, they pivoted to like, oh, let's go get Isaiah McKenzie.
Right, exactly.
And we need some speed and separators. And that's how we'll offset his lack of accuracy. You don't really hear any problems about a lack of accuracy anymore. He really worked on it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not there anymore. And so, yeah, I mean, the shakiest thing about Coleman to me is like carving out a role for a guy who...
Every week on the Moth Podcast, we share stories that are funny, strange, heartbreaking, and above all, true.
I myself have been married for 56 years. Unfortunately, to four different women.
It turns out the people I was looking for all my life is what you people would call nerds.
Follow and listen to The Moth on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It really depends on what they can do with him and where they want to deploy him and how flexible they are between he and Shakir, say. Like, I've got the big slot thing in my head with Coleman and working the middle of the field and using his body to just sort of, you know, just box guys out. I don't like the idea of featuring a guy in my offense who's going to depend, as much as it might be likely that he will depend on contested catches.
Yeah, it's not a winning – if that's your go-to ability, it's not a winning model. Like, for me, especially with receivers, I'm big on the guys like Palmer and Diggs. I'm a separation artist. I'm a technician. Maybe not the fastest guy, but I just get open. And that's where I think we'll know early if Keon is going to be a main fixture of the offense or Palmer or both.
Yep.
I think you could find out pretty early. Now, I will say there were games last year before Coleman got hurt where it was like, oh, okay, you're the guy now. The Seattle game I bring up a lot where he just, I mean, kind of just bullied a pretty good Seattle secondary. He's drawing penalties. They go to the jump ball twice to him. It didn't work once. They're like, cool, we're going to do it literally the next play, and it works. He's blocking guys into the sidelines. I mean, it was great. But Palmer's the guy I could see where just for a month and a half, you're like, he's averaging 6 targets a game. Like, Allen's just going to him all the time. And because he's also pushing the ball down the field. They really weren't able to do that. I think Palmer could be that guy.
And I could see them wanting, like I mentioned as a part of this, the team's motivation to feature Kincaid and or Coleman, right? Draft pick, equity, like, let's get these guys off. Palmer, while it's a modest contract by NFL wide receiver standards, you know, it's the biggest wide – well, no, Shakir's ahead of him now after he got his extension. But still, it was a significant contract for the Bills to sign at that position. I think they would also want to make that work. I mean, they want to make everybody work, but there's different degrees, I think, from out here of importance on guys. Like, if Palmer shows up and simply has, like, a Mac Hollins kind of year, even with the touchdowns, you'd be like, what are we doing here? You're paying $11, $12, $13 million for that? Did Mac Hollins do that for like a quarter of that last year? Like, what are we doing? So I think they're going to want to get Palmer off too. Like, there's, and so, you know, mouths to feed, everybody eats, et cetera, et cetera. I think you know the mantra. If you had to pick a player from the Bills' pass catchers, okay, it's not just receivers. I didn't bother listing a running back because I just cannot imagine the Bills' offense turning into something that features a 60 reception running back at this point. I mean, I suppose it could happen, but that would really blow my mind. So I listed, you know, the tight ends and the receivers, and we're just talking about that. You want to get in on the conversation? There's absolutely room for you to do so at 803-0550. Sal Capaccio coming your way in about 20 minutes. Matthew Collar an hour after that from Minnesota, our old friend, former morning show producer here at WGR. We'll get the lowdown on the Vikings and the NFC North from Matt when he joins us again at 5 o'clock. Mike is away today along with Zach Jones. I'm the Bulldog, and you are listening to WGR.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, we share stories that are funny, strange, heartbreaking, and above all, true.
I myself have been married for 56 years. Unfortunately, to 4 different women.
It turns out the people I was looking for all my life is what you people would call nerds.
Follow and listen to The Moth on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.